I'm Javier Onofre. I'm a PMC member for Apache Beam, software architect at Tenon, and member of the Apache Software Foundation. And in this talk, we're going to introduce to you how Beam can simplify and integrate your big data ecosystem.
So this talk is obviously related to the talk that happened, you know, just minutes ago. But like, if some of you were not here before, I'll do a quick introduction. So, you know, Apache Beam is an open source project intended for expressing batch and streaming data processing use cases. So when you use Beam, you are focusing on your logic and your data, not the details of the underlying engine that executes your pipeline. And Beam does not let the details of the underlying engine leak through your code. And this separation, this raising the level of abstraction from individual engines allow Beam pipelines to run on multiple engines without changes. So we'll repeat the same quote from an earlier talk. So Apache Beam is a unified programming model designed to provide efficient and portable data processing pipelines. So these three things are key: unified, efficient, and portable. So what happened today, this morning, is Apache Beam community announced the first stable release of Apache Beam. We call it 2.0. And this is really a statement from the Beam community that it intends to maintain API stability and compatibility for future releases for the foreseeable future. Kind of it is a statement about readiness for enterprise deployments. So, multiple talks here today. Please visit them if you'd like to learn more. But more importantly, tonight at 6:30, we'll try to do a birds of a feather session. So it's going to be kind of an open panel with a lot of Beam folks around. And you know, we can talk and discuss questions, problems, generally around Beam or data processing in general. So if you like, you know, kind of open panel discussions, questions and answers about any topic, any related topic, please try to attend around 6:30 today. Right, so in this talk, I'm going to focus on portability. The earlier talk today focused a lot about efficiency. In this talk, we'll talk about portability and how portability is achieved in Beam, and then the extension of that portability is integrating the system, the ecosystem together to really enable to run anything anywhere. And you know, as a break between those two things, we'll try to show a few screenshots how the pipeline looks like and how it actually runs on multiple engines. But before going into portability and extensibility, I'm going to sort of recap the model piece a little bit, just from a slightly different angle. So it will be a somewhat repeat, but like from a different angle. Okay? So let's look at expressing data processing pipelines with the Beam model. So you saw something like this in a previous presentation. The key thing in unifying batch and streaming processing is to thinking about event time and processing time. Event time is the time when the event actually happened. Processing time is the time our system got a chance to process the element. In the ideal world, all the elements would lie on this diagonal line. However, you know, some elements are closer to the line and they are not significantly delayed. However, some elements, like this element number 9, you know, may come to our system later due to the circumstances outside our control, like network connectivity of our users. Right, and the key thing in the Beam model is about asking the right questions. It's really about separating different concepts and not letting them, you know, form spaghetti of your code. Right, so separating each individual thing into a separate API, and those APIs then enable the things to transition and move naturally. So we'll focus on these four questions one at a time. So the first question is your business logic. It answers the question, what is being computed? So this is a code snippet of, you know, one line of code that takes an input and applies a transformation to it. In this case, the transformation is very simple. It just sums some integers. And then it produces an output collection, right? And you know, we'll use this example as across this talk. But the key insight here is your business logic can be as simple as summing integers, or you know, as complex as, I don't know, training machine learning models. However, the anything around this won't change. The details of how you run, where you run, will not leak into your business logic. And that is what is going to enable us to do the unification that you write your code really once. So let's look at how does this code of one line of code actually runs. So this is a running example of summing integers. So we have, you know, our data. As the processing time goes on, we learn about new elements, we sum them up, and the total sum is 51. When the pipeline completes, when we finish the processing, we produce the output of 51. And this is a really example of batch processing. You know, we start processing as the time goes on, we hit elements, at the end of the day, we produce a result. Now, let's talk about event time. If you are going to build a streaming system, we really have to, you know, start thinking about computing on a certain chunks of time. And the first is, you know, separating the input time into finite chunks. And the common concept of doing so is windowing. So in addition, just before doing summing integers per key, we are windowing the input into fixed windows of duration of 2 minutes. And then performing the same business logic. Right, so we have changed the use case. Instead of producing one output, we are producing an output per window. So for every 2 minutes. So we have changed the use case. We have changed the output of this pipeline by doing this one line code change. And instead of getting 51, we get four results, 14, 22, 3, and 12, for these four chunks of event time. Okay? But still, we did not build a real-time system. Our system produced four results for these chunks of event time, but they all were produced when the pipeline finished. To really get to real-time system, we really have to teach the system to start producing results as the time progresses. And then we answer the question of when in processing time do we output results? And we do it in Beam with the concept of a trigger, and we make another one-line change to this pipeline by specifying that the output should be triggered at watermark. This is really a statement of when the system believes that it has seen all the data for the given window, produce the output at that time. Right? And this is the first time we have built a pipeline that is real time. Right? Same example as before. We still have four results. However, that results for each window are emitted earlier than before. They are emitted at the moment system believes, heuristically, that it has seen all the data. And in this case, we see kind of the system was right 3 times, and the system, you know, was wrong once. And it was wrong for the first window, right? It produced the output of 5. However, this element of 9 came along much later than the system anticipated. And the system produced incomplete result for this window. Right? We have to realize that this is going to happen. And we have to teach the system what to do in this case. Right? The system can produce a refinement of the data once the element number 9 is seen. And we have to teach the system how those refinements relate to one another. And again, you know, we can modify a triggering a little bit and answer the question, how do refinements relate? So first, we are modifying a trigger by telling the system, in addition to producing results when the system believes it has seen all the data, produce early incomplete results intentionally every 1 minute. And then when you see late data, give me an update for every late element you see and how they relate to each other is that the final result is an accumulation from the beginning of the window to that point. And then with like two line change here, we have built a system that behaves like in this animation. We still have four windows. We still have on-time results when the system believes it has seen all the data. We have C correction if the late element comes. But in addition to that, we have early, incomplete, speculative results for each window where the result is, you know, trailing towards. And now we have built a complex streaming system, right? So in this example, I walked you through four use cases, from classic batch to a complex streaming use case. The business logic didn't change in any case, right? It was summing integers, but it could have been anything. And with one or two or three lines of code change, we were able to run this pipeline in a variety of scenarios, from a batch pipeline to a really complex real-time system, without any changes to your business logic, however complex it may be. And this is the power of Beam. This is the power of Beam's unified model. Okay?
So thanks to Dan and Dave, now we are obviously the core and the heart of Beam is the model by itself. And in terms of capacity and efficiency provided by the model. But more than that, the model allows us to implement portability. And portability from different perspectives. The first perspective is in terms of SDK. So the SDK is you as end users. How are you going to implement your Beam pipeline? So how are you going to implement the Beam model? And to do that, of course, we are all developers and we have slightly preferences in terms of language. Maybe I prefer Java, as Dan. Maybe I prefer Scala, for some of you. Maybe I prefer other things. So thanks to the model, I can decide to implement this model depending on the SDK. The second thing that I can, where I can be portable is in terms of running. So I have implemented my model using the SDK, and now I have to translate this model into an execution engine. So it's the purpose of a runner. You take the definition of your model, and you translate this inside a specific runner. The runner is pretty important, because it will allow you, of course, to choose the technology, Spark, Flink, whatever, but also the topology you want to use, on-premise, on-cloud, on the kind of hybrid solution, full management. And finally, in your pipeline, sometimes you want to hook and to inject your own code because you want to implement your own function. In that case, it means in the model, we have to provide a way to you to implement and to inject your own code. So that's the purpose of the last thing. So this is the vision, and this is where we are right now. So right now, it means in the 2.0 release. First, we have two SDKs, Java and Python. They are slightly different in terms of support. So with Java, you can support any kind of runners. So when you use the Java SDK, you can execute on your local machine using the direct runner. You can execute on Apex, on Spark, on Flink, on Dataflow. We also have GitHub development and Storm as a work in progress. Python is a bit different because with Python, the only runners supported right now is the direct runner, so local to your machine, and the data for runner. We are working right now to be able to run the Python code in any runners. Let's focus on three runners. Okay, it's the three we're going to use for the demo. Spark, okay, I guess most of you know Spark is a very popular choice. It's pretty cool in terms of in-memory and interactive execution. So you directly are the runner. Flink, it looks like a newcomer, but it's a very interesting execution engine in terms of streaming especially. And it provides a lot of interesting features pretty close to the Beam model. Google Dataflow is a full managed platform. So it means that this is what we name a no-hop. It means it can bootstrap new nodes for you automatically. You don't care about the number of nodes and all this stuff. So how we can do some abstraction, especially on the runner? We have different perspectives, different standpoints. The first standpoint we can take is
I take these three runners and I implement in the Beam model only the intersection of the different runners. That will work, but it means in terms of feature, it's really cool. We only implement a small number of capability. Second vision is, I take all feature from all runners and I implement all in Beam. Actually, it will be a chaos. No way to find a way. It's not possible to find a way to implement all feature provided by all runners in one abstraction model, agnostic model. So in Beam, we choose a different approach. It's a kind of iterative and looping approach. So some part of the Beam model are directly influenced by some runners. Let's say K-State API. K-State API is very classic in a lot of streaming engines, for instance, and it's something we added recently in the Beam model. So it means that the Beam model is extended depending on the use cases. But on the other hand, we try to be more, let's say, before the implementation in the runner. So it means that, for instance, Flink has been heavily influenced by the Beam model in terms of implementation. And of course, it means we can have slightly differences between the runners. Not all runners are equivalent in terms of capabilities compared to the Beam model. So that's why if you go on the website, you can see a capability matrix. It's what is supported by the different runners. Supported because I have the feature in the runner and the execution engine, or not supported for two reasons. Maybe the runner does not implement it yet, and it's our issue. Or the execution engine just don't support this. And so we cannot support it in the runner if the execution engine doesn't support that.
What's the difference between a tilde and an S?
The difference is it's
mostly supported but not fully supported, you know? X means no way. And time means in some use cases it can be supported, in some other it can. Streaming and batch, for instance, or stuff like that.
All right, so I'll show you a pipeline and I'm going to show you a screenshot of running that pipeline on various runners. So, you know, I had plans of giving you a live demo, but connecting to clusters live on hotel Wi-Fi and things like that, that was a little bit scary. So instead of a live demo, I'll show you some screenshots. So first is a screenshot of the pipeline. So this is going to be, you know, a real pipeline. I'm not going to show you a Word count demo, but it's still going to be something that we can, you know, grok in a couple minutes. So this is a pipeline that processes data from a mobile game, right? So you have a mobile game, it's producing some scores for each user. Each user belongs to a team, and we are interested in building a team leaderboard. So how many points has each team scored as a sum of, you know, each individual's belonging to that team, right? So it's a real thing that you might put in your app as a leaderboard, you know, if you're building, you know, some kind of game. But, you know, conceptually, it's still summing some integers, right? So this is pretty much the entire pipeline. So we are reading, so this first variant is going to be a batch pipeline that reads from, you know, historical data from a file. It then we do a parsing of those events. Then we set a timestamp for each element. So those are the first three lines. The first interesting line is this line over here, where we are grouping windowing the data into fixed windows of 1 hour. So we will produce kind of a leaderboard update every hour. And then we are going to calculate the sum for each team, right? And I'm going to look into, like, this is the overall view of the pipeline. And Beam model gives you the ability to sort of compose the pipeline of high-level things and low-level things. So I think we are going to look into the details of this parse event fun. This is like how we parse, for example, elements, again, you know, a few lines of code to take the line from the input file, split it on commas, you know, basically this is like a comma separated line, and then we try to parse it, and the key thing here is if we can't parse it, we will, you know, catch an exception and, you know, do a parse error. Right, and then calculate team scores is pretty much exactly what we've seen, you know, give each key based on the team, some integers per key, and then basically write it out per window in a file per window. So if you run this, so this is basically a full pipeline in the batch mode. I'll show you screenshots of that running across runners. So this is a screenshot of that pipeline running on the Dataflow runner. So what you can see on the left is, you know, a visual representation of that graph. So you saw text IO in the code, you saw parse game event in there, and then you see on the right some global data about that pipeline. If you click on, I don't know, text IO read, then you can see that on this pipeline we didn't run it on a toy data, we run it on 102 gigabytes of data, and there is like 1 billion elements added. The total execution time took about 40 minutes to run on this set of files. If we expand, I think one of these high-level building blocks, we can see kind of details of that composite transformation, and then see, you know, exactly as we wrote in the code, we can explore the built pipeline visually.
And you can see the same thing for Spark. So here it's in the same code, the same pipeline running in the Spark code. And so you can see exactly the same thing. I start from different tasks. So the pipeline is split by different tasks. And if I click on one stage, so I can have the details, and you can see my text I will read exactly like in the Dataflow UI. I have my parse game event. And if I drill down in one thing, I have a different task. And the number of tasks executed, the number of RGD behind the root generated, and all this stuff. Same thing about the number of write and reports read by different part of the pipeline. And here you have details about the execution time for each task. So if you spend time on serialization or computing, so again, we can see most of the time is spent on the execution of computing time. So you have the details translated. Same thing for Flink. So here we are in the Flink UI. Again, if you click on the pipeline, you have the details. I read from a text IO, I call my parse event. And here you have, if you click on one boxes, you have the details, and actually pretty the same as in the data flow in terms of read. So we have 100 gigabytes written by the source.
Okay, so this was a reasonably complex batch pipeline. Now we are going to do the same thing roughly in streaming. So as Dan talked earlier, what we need to do to make this streaming pipeline is change the source. Like, text file is not an infinite source of data. So we change the source from being text IO to being PubSub IO. So PubSub is a messaging service where you can basically subscribe to messages as they are published, and basically infinitely read events coming from there. We are again doing the same parsing of events. And then we are doing at the end the same calculating team scores. And this is the only change, this one apply section is the only thing we had to change in our pipeline to make this a streaming pipeline, right? Again, the key insight here is no matter how simple or complex your business logic is, this would be the only change to run this pipeline in a real-time mode. And let's look at this specific line. So now we are windowing the input data into fixed windows, this time of 5 minutes. And then we are triggering, and so basically producing results for each window when the watermark passes the end of the window. So that means when the system believes it's seen all the data. Then we produce early results. So for each 2 minutes of processing time, there will be one incomplete result so that people can see where the results are trending towards. And then for each unexpectedly late element, we are going to produce a refinement of the result, and the refinement is in the accumulating mode. Okay, so we can run the same pipeline in the Dataflow runner. Again, you see PubSub IO instead of text IO up there. And again, we are not running this on a hugely big data, but a reasonable data. So we are processing about 2,000 elements per second, in a continuous mode. Okay, and this is this pipeline running in the Flowrunner. So if you're a user, or if you'd like to try this out on your cluster, you just visit our website. So we have quick starts for Java and Python SDK, and we have walkthroughs for word count and mobile gaming that kind of walk you through the process of building and running a pipeline. This specific summing team scores for a mobile game is exactly taken from this mobile gaming walkthrough. And like you can follow that walkthrough and like reproduce this that you know we have shown you so far. All right, so far we talked about portability. Portability is take a pipeline and run it on multiple runners. But portability is really precursor to extensibility, to general integration, to run anything anywhere. Kind of in a some distant future, you can think of Beam model being the glue that connects different things together. Right? You can imagine, you know, at some point in the future, some API unrelated to Beam and some runner unrelated to Beam project, and Beam being the glue that connects them. So imagine that somebody invents XML API that does something, and you want to run it on the Spark runner. There is no Beam in the picture, or at least visible to the user. But Beam is the glue that can connect random XML style DSL to run on a Spark runner. And Beam can be the glue that connects and integrates the ecosystem to enable anything anywhere. So I'm going to drill down into those areas just a little bit. Okay, so let's first talk about what are the extensibility points that exist in Beam. Right, so we saw about SDKs, and you heard about Java SDK and the Python SDK. We talked about runners, like, you know, 4, 5, 6, or 7 of them. But that's not all. We have another 4 extensibility points that really enabled Beam to connect with other types of big data systems and to connect all things together. So just a quick recap about the SDKs. So SDKs run on top of the Beam model, and then they connect to the Beam model in a language-independent, runner-independent way, and then that, you know, independent way is passed to a runner that executes it. So right now we have Java and Python, with Java with much greater support across runners, but you know Python is coming along. On the runner side of things, same thing. The runner takes the Beam model, runner-independent, language-independent representation of your pipeline and executes it. So we support in Beam 4 runners, Apache Apex, Apache Flink, Apache Spark, and Google Cloud Airflow. These are the 4 runners released in the you know release of Beam that came out today. In addition to an ability to run pipelines locally, you know, for debugging purposes. We have 3 runners in progress with various stages of completion. So Apache Gear Pump is an incubating project that was started last year, and they are actively working on a runner, and they are basically near completion. Spark Point 2 is near completion. And then there is a runner for Apache Storm, JSTORM, and Twitter Heron that is sort of has passed the exploratory phase, and it's like starting development. Right, but those are, you know, basically coming over the next few months.
Just one thing, the Spark 2 runner is actually the same as the Spark runner. We try to be able to run on Spark 1 or Spark 2, depending on your dependencies, without using 2 different runners. Yeah, that's good.
Okay, but like, that's not all, right? The next accessibility point that kind of the Beam was envisioned is DSLs. DSLs is domain-specific extensions or domain-specific languages that really adapt the Beam model to your target community. Like if you would take Beam APIs right now, many of you may say that Beam is complex, that it can do complex triggering, and that it's really hard to understand, and it's really hard to, you know, really put to use for different kinds of communities. So really Beam was envisioned that Beam is a generic API. And if you want the full power of Beam, you use Beam's Java SDK, for example. But if you really want something else, if you want to really approach your community of, I don't know, data scientists or data analysts or, you know, some folks in statistics, and you want to meet them where they are, kind of, you can build a DSL on top of the Beam SDK, right? And you can imagine a DSL that is purely in XML, where, you know, you do not have the full power of the Beam model. You have a subset that is really targeted to your community. And then you basically, in a DSL, translate an XML that somebody wrote into an SDK pipeline representation, and then run it anywhere. And then sort of, that is kind of how we intend to, you know, reach out to various user communities and meet them where they are. Not with, like, you should use Beam APIs or Beam Java SDKs APIs. So right now, there is one fully fledged DSL written on top of Apache Beam. It is not part of the Apache Beam project, but it's a separate open source effort outside the project. It's called Shio, and it's written by Spotify. And it's intended for use in Scala, and it's used extensively by Spotify. The second one that is in progress within the Beam project is the SQL DSL, right? So you can imagine a translation of SQL-like queries into an SDK, and then running it on any runner, right? So one is done outside the project, one is currently in progress within the project. Okay, that's one additional extensibility point. Next extensibility point is libraries of transformations. So I typically look at this as there are many processes in you know, general data processing world that you may want to automate. So let's say that you are doing some kind of machine learning, and then you typically want to prepare your data for your machine learning algorithm. And so it's basically a combination of data processing and machine learning. So really, ideally, you would like to automate this orchestrated workflow as, you know, read my data, parse my data, prepare it, clean it, you know, get it ready for machine learning model, then run the machine learning model, then do something with the generated model. So kind of there is a bigger story, bigger scenario around you know, your use case. So TensorFlow is a, you know, really popular machine learning framework these days, and Beam or TensorFlow has developed a connector as a library of transformation in Beam that you can use TensorFlow from a Beam pipeline. So basically, you would read your data from any Beam source, apply any kind of Beam transformations to it, and then you just pipe it to TensorFlow without actually writing it somewhere, reading it from somewhere else. Kind of Beam orchestrates the whole thing for you. And basically, you know, TensorFlow becomes one composite, one transformation within a larger pipeline. So that's the only example that we have, you know, today. Although there are a couple of libraries, smaller libraries of transformation inside the Beam project, like, you know, something to simplify joins and things like that, that also exists. But TensorFlow is the main one. Right. So that was one of the extensibility points. Now we'll switch to the IOs. Right. So Beam does data processing. We need some data to read from. We need to write the output somewhere. IO connectors are intended for that. And in a previous talk, you heard a lot about how we work with IOs, what kind of IO APIs we have. In this talk, I'll just mention it briefly. Then within the Beam project, we have around 15, nearly 20 maybe, IO connectors written today. Right? This is a very small list of them. And in addition to that, we support all Hadoop input format sources. Right, so anything that works in Hadoop can, through Hadoop input format, be read from in Beam or written to. However, Hadoop input format ones don't have the nice Beam APIs and don't have an ability to take advantage of all the things you have heard before. So we are sort of developing some things as a direct beam connectors to take advantage of the APIs you have learned in a previous talk. So examples of things that are currently in progress in PRs are, you know, Apache Cassandra and Redis, things like that. The final extensibility point that I'd like to talk to is the file system extensibility point, right? In Beam, in addition to I/O connectors, we have extensibility point toward file systems. And if somebody were to write a file system connector, it would automatically work with like text I/O API that works in Beam, right? So for example, if you have, you know, if you look at S3 as a file system, you know, you don't need to write S3 I/O, or you don't need to write, you know, HDFS I/O. Like, you would write a much simpler file system, and then it would work with all the existing I/Os that are intended to read and write to files. So today, you know, we have support for Hadoop file system, through which we get HDFS, and then through which we get Amazon S3, through which we get access to Azure, and we have a native file system for Google Cloud Storage. Right, so these were some of the extensibility, like all of the extensibility points that exist in Beam, a total of 6 of them. So it's not just SDK and runners. So kind of the way to look at, the way I look at things is, like, if you have an engine, consider writing a Beam runner. Why would you do that? Because in addition, you get a lot of benefits. Any Beam SDK runs on your runner. Any Beam DSL can run on your runner, right? By writing a runner, you get access to all the things that the Beam already interacts with. So basically, you have a larger pool of users with that. If you want to extend Beam to new languages, sure. You know, you can consider writing an SDK. And then, you know, if you have cool ideas about what kind of APIs users should use, you can consider writing an SDK. And then users of that SDK have access to all the runners, so they are more likely to use your API. So that's why, you know, if you have ideas how to extend things, it's a good idea to think about writing it in a form of an SDK. Or like if you want to adapt an existing SDK to your target audience, maybe simplify the general model and maybe, you know, cut the unnecessary details, you know, get some simplicity at the loss of generality, or, you know, if that trade-off makes sense to you, write a DSL. And users of those DSL get, again, all the benefits of running anywhere. Or if you have some scenario, some process that can be part of a bigger pipeline and can be orchestrated into something, you can write a library of transformation. Or if you have a data storage or messaging system, you can write an either I/O connector or a file system. And you'll get stuff from it because your users can, for example, let's say that you write a new storage system. The first thing that people will ask you is how to get the data into your storage system, right? By writing an I/O connector in Beam, it can be used from any SDK, maybe from any DSL, and it can be executed on any runner. And that's how people can get the data into your new storage system. So kind of, this is, you know, the point of this particular talk. You know, Beam can be a glue and is a glue for things that it already interacts with to run anything anywhere, to interact, to integrate the big data ecosystem together. If you'd like to learn more or get involved, right? So, we welcome contribution from anyone. Join us on the mailing list, follow us on Twitter, and there is a, you know, Birds of a Feather session tonight, 6:30. And we're happy to, you know, have an open discussion about the project, related project, or, you know, data processing space in general. Again, the final reminder, there is a talk at 12:15 and then at 2:30 about some other aspects of Beam, you know, some use cases and some, you know, performance evaluation that you might want to consider attending. And again, if you're interested in hacking some things, for example, you know, how to write a pipeline or how to write an I/O connector to somewhere and things like that, a few of us will be here all day on Thursday. And we're happy sort of to, you know, hack around, debug things, and, you know, try to make things work if we can in a few hours. All right, that's it. Yep.
So how invasive are the runners? Are they just taking your Beam application and emitting some Scala code, which then gets compiled by the standard Scala compiler into a jar, which you then Spark submit? Or is it actually displacing the Spark master and individually assigning tasks to worker nodes? Or what level of, how invasive is it?
It's a case-by-case basis. So for example, I can say that, you know, I can take an example on the Flink runner, and there is an expert over here who can correct me if I'm wrong. So for the Flink runner, there is a high alignment between the model of, you know, Beam and the Flink APIs. So it's relatively straightforward to take, you know, Beam API and translate it to Flink, and then execute it natively on Flink. So kind of what the runner does is relatively smaller in that case, given the alignment. On the other hand, you know, alignment is lower on Spark. So the Spark runner, the main one that is in the most recent release is Spark 1.6, I believe. And that runner plugs into Spark deeper than the high-level things. So you would see, if you look at our capability matrix in more details, you'd see that, you know, Spark 1.6 has more features through Beam than through Spark APIs. And that is achieved by the runner actually going deeper and then, you know, taking over more of the functionality at the higher level. So that's kind of...
And sorry, in terms of execution, if you use Spark, you can still use your Spark Summit. I mean, you don't have to bootstrap using Beam. At the end, Spark doesn't really know that the code comes from Beam. You still use the Spark Summit with your jar file, and it will run on your Spark cluster.
Okay, cool. Who does the plan optimization in that case?
Each engine does it on their own. There is no Beam business about optimization or anything like that. The conceptual Beam pipeline is given to the runner, and each runner decides optimizations, where to run, how to run, how to collocate, how, when to stop. All these things are fully owned by each runner individually.
For instance, with example in the Spark runner, sometime in your Spark code you can do spark.persist or to spark.cache, and you can do that using the Beam API. And actually it's the runner that evaluate your pipeline and decide if at some point in the pipeline the RDD has to be cached or not, depending on the number of reads or stuff like that.
So language agnosticism seems to be a large design goal of Beam. So there's lots of languages that you can't run on lots of these execution engines natively. So does implementing an SDK for Beam involve implementing a compiler or some intermediary language that Beam then translates out into its final result?
I would say it does not involve writing a compiler, but it does involve conceptually something similar, right? So it does relate to kind of what Java did compared to C and things like that. So you can think of, you know, that Beam is Java on top of C. Sort of Java raised the level of abstraction to, you know, get, you know, platform independence, so you could run the same Java code on Windows and on Linux and elsewhere. And you had, you know, Java bytecode, which is sort of language independent, platform independent representation of your code that can then run anywhere. So this same kind of thing exists in Beam. So Beam has a set of primitives, like five or six of them, where each pipeline, you know, translates to. Like, you know, for those of you that, you know, a long time ago read a MapReduce paper, kind of MapReduce had, you know, very few primitives, and every, however complex your pipeline is, you can always figure out how to have a set of mappers and reducers and, you know, shuffles and, you know, produce the same thing. So this Beam is along the same line, right? So Beam compiles, even, you know, depending on the definition of the word compile, but produces your pipeline, compiles your pipeline to a set of six primitives, and then each runner is supposed to implement those six primitives, and it can run each pipeline. In addition, So that's a mandatory requirement to run everything. And then Beam also gives you annotations kind of to tell you like, yeah, there is, you know, some kind of mapper here, but this is part of a larger thing. So if you know how to optimize a larger thing, then you can replace the whole chunk with your own runner-specific smart implementation of something. So kind of we give each runner something compiled to very few primitives with annotations to tell you where this came from and what is the higher level concept. So each runner can, you know, implement those six primitives or understand at a higher level what this is and replace chunks with their own, you know, super cool way of doing things.
So does your business logic have to be written in a language that the runners and execution engine native understands?
No. Or sort of. Why Python SDK doesn't run on all runners today is because runners don't fully implement the portability framework. And that's kind of the step we are going towards, and when Python runs on every runner, that's the point we achieved that specific goal. But roughly the story is, there is an API on the execution side of things that is runner independent, and where you have to call back to the native language. And, you know, we are designing that API, like, you know, not to be poor in a way of inefficient, like doing something on a per element basis and so on. We are writing that API in a way that is, you know, bundle aware and can, you know, stream over an RPC interface a lot of things. So, but at the end of the day, you have to call in to the native language in which the user specified something. Yes?
What happens in case your runner doesn't support Apache Beam feature? Like, do you have some kind of graceful?
Yeah, basically the runner will fail. Right, so I generally we have six primitives. If you implement six primitives, you can run every pipeline. However, you can you may not be able to run it in every mode. Right, so you know there are some runners that, you know, do streaming only, or there are some runners that do batch only, or you know these kinds of things do exist in different runners. Typically, you will get an error when executing that pipeline on a runner that doesn't support it. And basically, it's fully communicated in that capability matrix that was there, and there'll be an X somewhere, you know, saying that, you know, maybe you should consider another runner for that execution.
What about some runner or execution framework specific features, like if I'm trying to run some Spark NLive pipeline?
Yeah, this is a weaker point. Like, there was some earlier in the talk, I'll try to skip through back. Give me a sec. Right, so here, like, your use case would be a union. There is a feature inside of Spark where, you know, it's not part in maybe another runner, so it's not part of a general thinking of doing this. And, you know, our general philosophy here is, you know, we'd like to extract data processing patterns out of the runner and, you know, push, you know, primitives into the runner. So influence in both directions. And, you know, if there is some feature, you know, in here, you know, it's questionable what's the right processing pattern and, you know, on which side of this, you know, infinite circle it should live. But, like, if you really want something that exists today, here, and it's not there, it's non-trivial to make it happen. It would probably be a change to the Spark runner to take advantage of it. It's probably, you know, something that can be done in a few hours, but it's not something that we kind of encourage people to do. More questions? All right, thank you guys. Consider coming at 6:30.